Monitor 67, your host, Brad Crandall. 3 minutes ahead, former Governor Harold Stassen gives his views on administration policy in Vietnam. Also in this half hour, Joe Garagiola's sports analysis of an all-time great baseball manager, Leo Durocher. John Kerry is up first with Everybody Say Peace.
I wish I had a big, big camera. I'd hang it up in space and take a family photograph of the whole human race. Watch the birdie and everybody say peace. Everybody say peace to make the whole world smile. Everybody say peace. Everyone together and line them up in rows. I check the film and set the lens and shout, hold that pose. Watch the birdie and everybody say peace. Everybody say peace to make the whole world smile. Everybody say peace. If that's the way it happened once, it's the way it could always be. Watch the birdie and everybody say peace. Everybody say peace to make the whole world smile. Everybody say peace and everybody say peace. Everybody say peace to make the whole smile. Everybody say peace. And everybody say peace. Everybody say peace.
Question. Where does Harold Stassen stand on Vietnam? The former Minnesota governor is a veteran public figure, was associated with the Republican Eisenhower administration. He makes his position on current Washington policy clear in a talk with Monitor reporter Betty Grobley.
Governor Stassen, from your experience with the President Eisenhower, what do you think our path should be in Vietnam?
Well, the path of peace is not the way we're now traveling, but neither would it be the way of withdrawal. It is to move forward in four parallel courses of action. First, an initiative to open up the potential of a truly worldwide United Nations, modernized and strengthened by having two Vietnams, two Chinas, two Germanys, and so forth. In other words, open up that potential for the competition of, instead of the war. Secondly, de-escalate the war by clear American decisions. Stop the hunter-killer drives through the jungles and over the hills. Stop the widespread bombing except in defense against attack. Turn more to General Gavin's advice and General Shoup's advice. Third, put a great humanitarian program in top gear. Use more of these resources that are now being spilled in the war for the educational, the economic advance of the Vietnamese people. And fourth, maintain a very strong, powerful American position, alert and poised, but in a quieted down defensive role. This is the path of peace in Vietnam. I'm confident from all my experience in that part of the world and with President Eisenhower.
What is our commitment there? Is this written down someplace?
Yes, President Eisenhower's letter to Premier Jim, but it did not include American combat. It did not include what President Johnson began to do in February 65. It meant the kind of economic and defense assistance that we have done all over the world with various countries as they emerge and try to come forward. So there is not a commitment to do what's now being done, and we ought to quiet down instead And as you probably realize, both President Kennedy and President Eisenhower, in following through from that 1954 letter, in 10 years only had 100 American deaths in the whole 10 years, and there were less Vietnamese being killed. So this escalation of the war simply leads to escalation in response. It's a tragic mistake. It must be re-examined and readjusted.
Governor Stassen, are there others who feel as you do in the administration?
Yes, a growing number, thankfully. I've been writing to senators and congressmen and governors, and of course have been pressing on President Johnson and Walt Rostow to re-examine and to change before they continue to escalate and have these tragic consequences. There is a growing response, and I've had some tremendous responses from audiences as they hear the total presentation, ask their questions, and then show their indication that they want this kind of a new direction in our policy in Vietnam and in the strengthening and modernizing of the United Nations.
There seems to be some public reaction, though, when anyone suggests allowing, permitting, mainland China to come into the UN and other countries.
They don't think it through. You see, if you're going to have an organization serve the aim of peace, in other words, to save succeeding generations from the scourge of war, you've got to bring the world inside the organization. This world segregationism that's being spoken of now is unsound. The way communism will be defeated is not through war, but through the evolving pressure of peoples in the communist countries gradually pressing upward for freedom for themselves. This is beginning to take place. It's beginning to take place especially where we kept the windows of the world open to Poland and Czechoslovakia and to Russia itself. But when you seal off these countries in an unsound way, like mainland China and the Vietnamese people and the German people, with now neo-fascism beginning to re-arise as you keep them out, this emphasizes that the path of peace is a worldwide path in which you let all peoples, whatever their form of government, come in and be eligible to come in just so they'll take the commitments of the revised charter and go forward together with controversy, with difficult times, but in a framework of a competitive struggle and debate rather than the kind of crises that are now in the Mideast and are now engaged in the Vietnam War.
We've been talking with Harold Stassen, former governor of Minnesota, and he was, of course, special assistant to President Eisenhower. This is Betty Grobley for Monitor.
Ah!
the Young Americans with their version of Born to Be With You. It's 19 minutes after the hour. We're keeping you up to date on significant people, music, and events on the Monitor Beacon.
3 miles will fix your transmission.
Get packed, get up and go.
3 miles. Since you've got 4 miles a-coming,
keep that car a-humming.
Power slipping, fluid dripping, don't take chances, take it to a pro. Lee Miles Transmission Centers, coast to coast. Now's the time to get your free transmission checkup for hot weather driving and vacation trips at Lee Miles, the most trusted name in transmissions for nearly 2 decades. M-Y-L-E-S. Look at the yellow pages.
Lee Miles. Guarantees perfect condition.
Get back, get up and go.
Come on in and get your transmission fixed by a pro.
More smiles, more miles, Lee Miles.
That's Lee Miles Transmissions in Passaic at 785 Main Avenue, in Brooklyn at 812 Remsen Avenue, Lee Miles.
WNBC New York, the big voice of Big Town USA, answers your questions.
Monitor continues now. Hey, is it raining or sleeting or fogging or maybe just plain nice where you are now? Where Vicky Carr is, she basks in musical sunshine.
I've spent too much time here in the dark, trying to hide, trying to hide. I've spent too much making a tomb of my room. But suddenly along comes you. From it all. But now at last you come my way. You brought me to the light of day.
Where I will walk in the sunshine of your smile. Walk in the sunshine of your smile. Walk in the sunshine of your love.
The love that I've been dreaming of. Yes, I want to.
A little fresh insight into Leo DeRocher's influence on ballplayers, just 2.5 minutes away with Joe Garagiola. Monitor music by Ed Ames first. He sings Timeless Love.
Timeless love, tender love, joyful love, gentle love, wondrous love, love divine, you're one half angel, one half mine. Softest love, strongest love, strangest love, youngest love, endless love, purest love, precious love. How can love be so right? Timeless love, tender love, joyful love, gentle love, wondrous love,
And now, Monitor Sports with Joe Garagiola.
The big baseball story for the first half of this season has to be the Chicago Cubs. Last year, they finished dead last. Not too long ago, they were in first place. Since the personnel is basically the same, a great deal of the credit has gone to manager Leo DeRocher. What does DeRocher do to a ball club? And for an answer to that, I talked with a player who was a key man in the Giants' miracle drive to the pennant back in 1951, Monty Irvin. I asked Monty what Leo does to supply momentum to a team.
Well, Joe, I think he has the ability to, you know, to inspire a player. I know he did that with the Giants. Now he's doing it with the Cubs. He has that, I don't know what you'd call it, magnetism or what have you, but he has this ability to get you up for a long, long time, and apparently he's done this with the Chicago Cubs now.
DeRocher has a reputation of concentrating on one young player. In Brooklyn, when he managed over there, it was Pee Wee Reese. Now it's Adolfo Phillips of the Cubs. 16 years ago with the Giants, it was Willie Mays. I asked Monty Irvin what Leo did for Willie.
He gave him confidence. He made him believe in himself. He made him think that he was a great ball player, which he was. He made him even think that he was greater. And instilled confidence in him. I think this is the main thing that he does. He instills confidence. He became, you know, the ball player he is today.
What kind of player does DeRocher handle best? Some people say veteran players. Others say the kids. I asked Monty Irvin his opinion.
Well, originally I thought he was a great manager for the veteran, for the player that had made it. But I've changed my mind. I think he's just a good manager, period. I think he's a good manager for the young ball player now because he has patience. I think he's learned to be patient with the youngsters, which I think you have to have. And, with the job that he's now on Adolfo, of course, Adolfo Phillips, I mean. This now, you know, takes a lot of patience, and I'm just so happy to see it, Joe.
In 1951, DeRocher got an outstanding job from Monty Irvin. How did Leo handle him?
Well, he knew they didn't have to say anything to me because I was going to go out there and do the best I could from day to day. But some guys, you have to, like, go over to them and kind of make up to them a little bit. Constantly talk to them and try to get the best out of them. Because all my life, I've always given the best every day. But some guys, tend to let down just a little. And with Leo, of course, he sees this. He knows who he has to talk to. He knows who to let alone. And he works on the guys, of course, that he has to talk to. Every now and then, he'd come over and pat me on the back and say, I know you can do it because you've been doing it all year, this kind of thing. You see, he has the ability, I think, to make the right move when he has to do it.
And that was Monty Irvin, former star outfielder for the New York Giants. And this is Joe Garagiola for Monitor Sports.
Joe Garagiola is heard each weekend on Monitor, also weekdays on NBC Radio. Sandy Koufax, newest member of the Monitor Sports family, is another weekend regular. Alpert's Tijuana Brass and The Happening. Your weekend is ending with Monitor, a listening companion coast to coast. In southeastern Ohio, you hear us on WHIZ Radio, Zanesville. This is Brad Crandall.
This is Monitor, a world of news, sports, and entertainment on the NBC Radio Network.
Monitor.
You're with Monitor 67. I'm Brad Crandall. Can we face the future bravely with an empty wallet when the day of the cashless society arrives? An economic prediction from a university expert during this half hour. At the moment, Andy Williams singing More and More. Talking cartoonist Al Capp arrives in just 30 seconds.
Helen, I'm home. What's for supper? Hey, you're sure bright-eyed. I'd be bored to death with this housework routine day after day.
Busy mothers, women who can't afford to be dull, sharpen their wits with No-Doze. No-Doze Keep Alert tablets or new chewable mints, safe as coffee, help you keep up with people and conditions around you. So to fight off afternoon letdown,
sharpen your wits with No-Doze. No-Doze keeps you alert.
Monitor's expert on nothing, with opinions on everything, is here. That's Al Capp, who's rather worried about one small segment of the younger generation.
You meet a lot of folks from home in Canada these days, older folks and their kids who've come to enjoy Expo 67, and younger folks, mainly male, who've come to enjoy Exodus 67. In Toronto the other day, I ran into one guy I'd known at college in Cambridge. He said he was now living in Canada. He asked why I hadn't asked him why he was living in Canada, and I said I thought I knew. He said that he was sure I didn't. That people of my type couldn't understand that people of his type came to Canada to protect the United States. Well, I didn't understand that, and I confessed I didn't, and so he went on and patiently explained it to me. The United States, he said, had invested 22 years of its best education in him. He said it simply wasn't practical to risk that investment in the defense of the country when it could be just as well defended by someone who had to drop out of school and go to work when he was, say, 16. That type represented a considerably lesser national investment and a less important loss if that's the way the cookie happened to crumble. And so he said, to protect one of his country's valuable resources, namely himself, he'd beat it to Canada, and he said he guessed that was why people like me thought of people like him as the beat generation. I said I thought of them more as the deadbeat generation. And this is Al Capp speaking to you on NBC's Monitor.
Hear Al Capp every weekend on Monitor. Right now, the graduates have the beat with Greensleeve.
I walked one day beneath the sun. My heart was
sweet as the music of green sea. Gone, gone is the love we knew, and my heart grows sad when I think of you.
It's 17 minutes before the hour on Monitor 67 with Brad Crandall. We Americans mark our Independence Day in July. So do the Colombians, who won freedom from Spain 148 years ago this Wednesday. Congratulations, amigos. You're on the Monitor Beacon.
Sinatra, the Naked Runner. Sinatra, the Naked Runner. Sinatra, the Naked Runner, from Warner Brothers in Technicolor.
See The Naked Runner starting Wednesday at the Forum and Murray Hill Theaters.
Costlier than a flood, uglier than a pile of garbage, more dangerous than a landmine. Look, down on the ground, it's a bottle, it's a can, it's ugly litter. Disguised as a harmless pamphlet, newspaper, or carton of milk dropped carelessly on the ground, thrown in the water, or left on the beach, it becomes litter. An ugly monster waging a never-ending battle against health, safety, and American beauty. Save your trash for the nearest litter basket. Keep America beautiful.
WNBC, New York.
An expert forecast about economic utopia after Trini Lopez sings The Bramble Bush.
The bramble bush is lovely. It thrills you with delight. The flowers on the bramble bush were all so pink and white. But if you reach to pluck one, as sure as you are born, the bramble bush will stick you with it. Julie Thorne and the pretty girl is like a bramble bush. Yes, a pretty girl will thrill you very much. Oh, a pretty girl is like a bramble bush. But you'll get stuck if you should touch. The girl I fell in love with, what such a lovely sight. So beautiful to gaze upon, so soft and pink and white. And as I reached to kiss her beneath the summer skies, I was so much in love I didn't realize that a pretty girl is like a bramble bush. Yes, a pretty girl will thrill you very much. Oh, a pretty girl is like a bramble bush. But you'll get stuck if you should touch. Aha! The summer soon was over, and autumn chilled the sky. The flowers on the bramble bush began to fade and die. And with the faded flowers, my true love traveled on. And I can feel the thorns now that my lover has gone. Got the pretty girl, yes, is like a bramble bush. Yes, a pretty girl will thrill you very much. Oh, a pretty girl is like a bramble bush. But you'll get stuck if you should touch. Oh, the bramble bush. Yes, the bramble bush. Oh, the bramble bush. Yes, the bramble bush.
The more credit cards you carry, the less cash you need. So they say, and one day perhaps We'll live in a completely cashless society. What do you think about that? And for that matter, what does Dr. Hubert Hefner, the Dean of Research at Stanford University, think? Monitor reporter Dean Mell finds out.
Dr. Hefner, will we have a cashless society?
I don't think we'll have a completely cashless society. It certainly seems evident to me that we're going to have a lot more of what might be called automated buying, in the sense that probably stores will be tied in through perhaps telephone lines to banks. There will be some mechanism whereby a customer will come in with identifying himself perhaps by a card or a thumbprint or maybe even his voice establish who he is, makes a purchase. The store then automatically transmits the information to the bank. His account is debited and the store's account is credited with the price of whatever article he purchases. I think there's going to be a widespread use of this, but quite obviously we're going to need cash to tip the bellhop, to put the penny in the gum machine, and so on. So cash is not going to disappear, but I suspect we'll need a lot less of it.
Dr. Hefner, the idea of a computerized society must bring with it innumerable complex problems. What are some of the problems as you view them?
One of them that worries me seriously is the hazard of Orwell's 1984, the Big Brother possibilities that are inherent in this. Because one looks forward to situations where not only is the income tax handled by computer, not only is there a cashless society in which every transaction which you make, whether it's the airline tickets you buy or the bookstore bill or whatever, is in the memory bank of the computer, but also the doctor will have his patient records on computer files, and all of the court cases, the minor transgressions which an individual as a child or young adult might have committed, will all be stored in the memory. And one has to, it seems to me, make sure that there are some kinds of protections built into the system so that unauthorized access and unauthorized gathering of all of this various data can't be made. And as a matter of fact, the authorization better be pretty carefully spelled out, because it's going to be possible to determine what your medical history is, what books you've read from what your bookstore purchases have been, what magazines you subscribe to, where you've gone, and the possibilities for individual control by government or by any other agency are frightening to me in this.
Have you given any thought as to how society might protect itself from that sort of all-encompassing knowledge?
There may be methods of controlling, through the programming of the computer, the inability to gather all of this information together in one spot and one time.
Will the cybernetics, as it becomes more and more commonplace, replace human labor so that we not only will have a cashless society, but we will have a generation of people with no place to go at 8 o'clock in the morning?
Well, it's already reduced the work week within the country by a notable amount. Yes, I think that there is no question but what we're going to have more and more leisure. But it's a surprisingly inverted situation in that those who are in the top managerial position seem to, if anything, be working harder and longer. So that almost, well, there have been predictions that the future will show a slob appeal to work, which is exactly the inverse of what's happened in the past.
Professor Hubert Hefner, Stanford University, commenting on chances for achieving a cashless, virtually workless society. Reuben Mitchell at the piano playing Dardanella. NBC Monitor News on the hour follows, so stay tuned.
This is NBC.